microphone. I would like to remind you to state your name before you start the questions or the comments and so on.
Hi, yet again, Rodrigo Ramos from University of São Paulo, Brazil. My question is to Mani. You mentioned at some point in your presentation that you use white noise, Gaussian white noise, for modeling ambient data, ambient samples. How fair is it a model of the noise that that really happens in real power systems, given that you have access to real data?
That's a very good question, because we get this question from other researchers as well. I would just start by saying that this is not an assumption that is exclusive to power systems. This assumption is commonly made in ambient modal analysis, such as what we do in power systems. And it is also used, for instance, in civil engineering, where they study the structure of bridges. They have disturbances from cars and buses going over the bridge, and then they want to detect if any of the structural modes is becoming poorly damped, because then, in that case, the bridge will collapse. So that's a big concern for civil engineers. And there is similar research in aeronautics, in airplanes. So this is a problem that is across several domains. Now, specifically with respect to power systems, we assume the fluctuations from the loads are random. And it is true for a short period of time. Whereas if you look at long periods of time, such as 30 minutes or 20 minutes, there is a ramp also that goes with the load response. So then it becomes more tricky to assume that the perturbation is strictly Gaussian. So there are some limitations to the assumption. But in reality, we have seen that the assumptions work well, because we have this running in, like I said, in several companies, and there are other researchers. There is a, here we have Claudio, who has looked at this problem. You know, he wrote one of the early papers on subspace identification. And then, you know, Professor Dan Trubnarsky and John Hauer, they have been working on this for many years. So this is a well-known assumption, and it appears to work well in the real systems, because we get excellent results. I showed some examples, and we have written several other papers on field results.
Thank you.
Okay, Sandro Corsi from Italy. A question to Mani about the voltage stability indicator you use. And based on the sensitivity, the ratio between the reactive power variation and voltage variation. And when this ratio approaches to zero, you have a high risk of voltage stability. Now, my question is your experience on the value of this index. Because, in my view, when the voltage stability increase, the voltage reduced. But even if the generator are limited in the reactive power by the over-excitation limit, the line discharge, and so the reactive power continues to flow in the in the bus. So, which are the values of this indicator that give a real indication of the high risk?
Okay, that's again a very good question, and it's a tricky technical question. I would like to clarify that the sensitivities that we talk about is not del Q by del V with respect to the line equations. What we assume is we are having the line perturbed from loads at the two ends of the line. Then it is like a QV plot, that the system is getting perturbed from various points in the system. And we then try to calculate in the current system how much is the variation or how much is the sensitivity of the line flow to the voltage. And our aim or the motivation, which we described in our paper, is to calculate the slope of the QV curve at each bus. And when that slope becomes zero, we know theoretically that it is a problem for the system. But to do that, we need to have access to several lines at the substation. So just looking at the value from one line may be misleading, because the problem may be tied to a different part of the system which this line is not connected to. And also, I will give you that, like I answered the other question, we have seen that the approach works well in real system. We had one case where we saw that the sensitivity dropped significantly on one of the PMUs, whereas there was no indication of anything going on in the system. So we went back and checked with the company, and the company later told us that operators are ordered TLR, where they reduce power from another part of the system, and the part where we saw the sensitivity drop, they had increased the generation. So it was putting out more, so that part of the system became more stressed. And the good thing for us, the validation, was that we didn't know. We got these from the measurements, and we were able to get some verification that our analysis was going in the right direction. And also there was another case where there was a voltage collapse in one part of the system which is traditionally considered strong, where they had two thermal plants or two thermal units. But it turned out on that day one unit was offline and another unit had a fault and tripped out. And when the two generators which were supporting that bus tripped out, that bus became a weak bus. And we saw that the sensitivity, you know, dropped significantly. So that is again an indication. You know, going back to what you were saying, it is sensitive to generators. You are absolutely right. And we cannot predict what's going to happen, which is one of the weaknesses of the approach. But when it becomes weaker in the system, we see that in the data.
Yeah, Claudio Canizares, University of Waterloo. This is a comment and a question for the first paper. My comment regards that transformation you mentioned about cosines and sines, which is interesting, in something that I, if I recall correctly, I'm getting old, but my memory is getting also a bit weaker, but I remember work that Thomas Overby did back in the late 80s, early 90s, in which he was looking at a similar approach. But basically the transformation there is just transforming the power equations into polar coordinates. So basically something similar to that. The other comment is regarding the issue of Lyapunov functions when you have all these controls included in the model, which makes these makes your approximations, basically your the Lyapunov function sort of becomes much more, if you will, pessimistic, right, with respect to the actual behavior of the system. So now, with that in mind, my question is regarding the separation of the system. When you separate your system based on Jacobians, it depends on which point you compute the Jacobian, right? The more stressed the system, then you end up with different approaches. So I wonder how that affects that change in the system as it evolves. How is that factoring into this approach of dividing the system in different areas to basically combine them in this Lyapunov approach? Thanks.
So it's very, this sum of square techniques, these algebraic techniques are very flexible. And I can point you to a very nice review paper by Antonis in which he looks at a number of problems that you can deal with sum of square techniques, including models in which you have switching dynamics between different dynamical description of the same system. So in principle, you can include, and if you add to that a system decomposition, And you can analyze locally what happens to the switching dynamics and bound the disturbances induced in your interacting neighbors, then it gives you a lot of flexibility to deal with some of these issues. The second part. So I'm answering the complexity of the model that you can handle. Of course, you are limited by the size of the sum of square problems that you can solve. And right now I'm moving away from using simple semi-definite programming solvers, and I'm trying to move toward using parallel semi-definite programming solvers. And I'm really curious to see how far I can push these techniques to deal with more complex dynamical models and to include even switching dynamics in some of these descriptions. I think you also had a...
About the evolution of the system, I think.
That's right. So essentially, you don't have to... You may adapt, if you want, the decomposition as the system evolves. I'm not so sure that's strictly necessary. What you can... So there are basically lots of things you can do which have been done in different contexts to adapt the model that offers a description of the system in order to better understand the transient stability limits of your system. So I think there is potential in these techniques. The weakness is basically their scalability.
Janusz Białek, Durham University. Again, question to the first speaker. So if I understand correctly, the efficiency of your methodology depends on how well you decompose the system. It means into parts which are internally closely connected and weakly connected between them. And use spectral clustering technique, which is a well-known technique. Now, the problem with spectral clustering is that it divides the system into equal parts.
Well, you don't have to do that. I mean, in some sense, you just define the size of the subsystems, and you use that size to decide on your eigenvector where you want to put the threshold for your cutoff. So
you don't divide into equal parts. You divide into the information which are getting out of eigenvectors.
You can decide the size of the two subsystems. And because I had the goal to divide it into three equally sized subsystems, the first cut was into a two-bus model and a four-bus model for the second subsystem. And then I divided further the second subsystem into two.
But how big systems? But it was just small systems.
It was a very small system. And that choice was basically dictated because when you started this work, my intention was to compute a composite Lyapunov function, which is what James and Anton is doing in their original paper. But there are some issues with that. They impose sparsity on the Lyapunov function, and that sparsity impacts you very badly on the region of attraction estimate. And sparsity enables them to scale and find a composite Lyapunov function, which is a positive weighted sum of individual Lyapunov functions. So when you squeeze these Lyapunov functions, you take the juice out of them, you find a composite one, but the region of attraction are so poorly estimated that it's basically useless for transient stability analysis. So, and then I decided it doesn't make sense because I'm really interested in optimizing how well I approximate the region of attraction. And I realized when I tried to do that, I couldn't scale it up. So that problem was already too big. And then as I was working a little bit more, I realized I don't need it. I don't care, because if you look at this decomposition, the stability check is of the order M, the number of subsystems. If you are familiar with small gain network small gain theorems, they basically look for all possible loops in your system that guarantee a small gain stability analysis. That scales very badly with the size of their system. While this analysis scales very nicely, if I'm correct, it's just the size of the number of subsystems.
Well, so you've interrupted my question, so I didn't answer the question. So basically, there's a small system, so seven-node system. So basically, spectral clustering is basically overkill. But if you go to the real-size systems, because it's difficult to tell anything about from the analysis of the seven-node system, if you go to decent-sized systems, then basically you have to look at more sophisticated use of traditional Fiedler-based clustering, looking, not dividing into equal sizes, that's what I'm saying, but using the information in the spectral distances, which is involved in that, into revealing the internal structure of the system. We have done some work recently which showed that basically you can use that information to reveal what the system really is, how closely are different parts connected, rather than shoehorning them into a given number of divisions, which is the basis of the Fiedler method. But I think that will come up when you go to the next stage, when you're talking about the real size systems, kind of 100 nodes, you know, why don't you do that something like that rather than seven nodes?
We can do it. I mean, that was just one technique. There are many available techniques out there to do system decomposition. I'm more concerned about the situation in which the system is not naturally decomposable into weakly interacting subsystems. And one way to deal with that problem is not to compute just locally a Lyapunov function. You can import degrees of freedom from your neighbors and to include in your stability analysis. So there are ways to probably deal with some of these issues.
Thierry Van Ketsen, University of Liège, Belgium. A question for you, Seng Xu. Your presentation was dealing with the stability limit. I'd like to know if you have considered the problem of the voltage dip that goes with a pronounced rotor oscillation. I mean, if you take if you are located at the, let's say, electrical center of the system, when you have a very large angle deviation, the voltage magnitude at that bus can go very long for a non-negligible amount of time. So if you have somebody living there, he's not in a good shape. I mean, if you have load there. My question is, do you have such situation in the Chinese system? And if so, can you incorporate this additional constraint in the analysis?
Thank you. Up to now, we are pay attention mainly in the transient stability, but for the angle stability. But for the transient periods, voltage stability or acceptability is also concerned. Let's say that we are doing the online simulations to find we're supposed to define a two elements table. One is, say, the dip of the voltage reduction. Another is, say, the duration of the sink. So if we get of course, for the during fault, we cannot change the situation. But if the fault is cleared, but there is an oscillation in the system, then we found some load nodes near the oscillation scent will be exceed the limitation. Then we can also change in, give some suggestion to change the situation. But it's not always happened. If we correctly to switch off the lines and there is no oscillation, then this will not happen.
Ian Hiskins, University of Michigan. So I have a question regarding the equal area criteria idea. It's always sort of amazed me that you can take really large, very complex power systems and kind of condense them down to two area or a single machine infinite bus equivalent. But it seems to work, and so there's an inherent robustness in existing power systems. And I guess my comment question is, I wonder how that will change as the discussion yesterday about low inertia generation, inverter-based generation, as there's more and more non-traditional generation that comes into the system. I wonder whether that robustness will remain and whether there'll be one will start to see other effects that that are not captured at the moment.
Yes, thank you, question. The integrated EAC is based on the actual simulation trajectory. So it's no matter what kind of the modeling you use, and you change the model, or even you switch off the lines and the generators and the loads, and also if you have some the wind power and something, anything. Since if you can dealing with this mathematical modeling, you will get the right trajectory, right? So the EAC itself is not to want to change the trajectory, but it's only a method to extract the information from the trajectory. So it's only say starting from the trajectory you made. So that this modeling difficulty and some time varying effects will also have already contained in the trajectory itself. So that is independent of this effect.
I have a question for Marian. I guess as I was listening to your method, I got the impression that the method will perform well if you can decompose into weakly coupled systems. But please verify this or tell me if it's different. And then in this case is how much fidelity you're going to lose from this method if you apply it to more coupled systems. And of course, in the US, we have two very good examples, the Western interconnection. You can get islands that are weakly coupled, but then you go to the East, and it's very difficult to do that.
So as you can probably guess, I'm just starting to play with this idea and try to understand it better. So maybe it's relevant to tell you how James and Antonis came up with this decomposition. It's more than just a spectral decomposition algorithm. They applied that technique to linear systems. They could find the Lyapunov functions for each subsystem, but they couldn't find a composite Lyapunov function when they use a decomposition only using structural information from the dynamics. The moment they added energy flows between the subsystems, so balancing both the strength of structure interaction and strength of energy flow, they were able to find a composite Lyapunov function. So there is some strength in the way they modified the traditional spectral decomposition algorithm. Also, what they did, when you do the decomposition, of course, if the subsystems are not weakly interacting, you may not find the Lyapunov function for the individual subsystems. And in that case, they proposed to add degrees of freedom from the neighboring subsystems, and you do a search until you find the Lyapunov function. Of course, the question now is how conservative is the estimate of the region of attraction when you do this decomposition? And that's an interesting question, and I don't know the answer. It's not obvious to me a priori that finding and doing a decomposition to estimate the stability region is worse than having a global Lyapunov function for the entire system and trying to estimate the region of attraction. It's not at all obvious a priori to me. As you noticed, in this decomposition, I don't give you an expression for the region of attraction. You give me a disturbance, and I can estimate if that is stable according to the assumption I'm making. Each one of these Lyapunov functions, in some sense, is conservative, but it's not obvious to me how that translates into a global estimate of the region of attraction. It may be better than finding a global Lyapunov function, but I don't know that, and it's not clear it's also generic, if it's better or worse.
Thank you. Any more questions? Okay, I see everybody's hungry, I guess. Oh, there is one more from... Yeah.
Ian Hiskins, University of Michigan. Sorry. So, question for Marian. A lot of the decomposition or distributed ideas that are in the control community, they're dealing with differential ODE systems, whereas power systems are these differential algebraic structures. And it's not clear that the ideas of being able to take some of the states and treat them as being, you know, disturbances from another region, as you have with the ODE model, those ideas don't seem to always follow through into where the couplings are via algebraic equations. There's a significant difference in having the couplings via algebraic equations, I think. And have you explored that very much yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, let's thank our authors and presenters.
Yeah, well, not only dinner, please let me explain. Today is your first introduction to Cretan music. This is an island where they still